Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to our fourth installment on the ISIS Papers, Chapter 6, on Black Male Passivity, Effeminization, Bisexuality, and Homosexuality. We expect this to be the last installment on this particular chapter. My name is Charles, and we have Jalavet, a member of the African Malice Book Club.
Yes, and Brother Amin, you are on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
What's up?
What's up?
Who else is with us?
Also, we have Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Eric.
No, I guess we don't have Eric. Okay.
Okay, we don't have Eric. Okay.
All right.
All right. I believe we left off on page 89.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, children.
Hey, Amina.
Okay, well, let me move out of the way here.
There you have it. Let's see. And all right. Let's see. Well, we left off. We were just finishing up where how black males learn that it's easier to be a female than a male, and how the culture promotes the pre-adolescent male to decide that black manhood is something he doesn't want to accomplish, aspire to fulfill in his destiny. And and so here on page 89, she goes into the transformation from masculine to effeminate. Okay, and I'll just read the last big paragraph 8 and roll right on in, and we all can express our interpretation or any, evaluations that we have upon this material. It is, in childhood, male children learn, whether at home or at school, that they can make mothers and female teachers happy when they shower you with smiles and affection, when they act like females rather than boys. Dearth of adult black males in the homes, schools, and neighborhoods leave black male children no alternative models. Blindly, they seek out one another as models, and in their blindness, they end up in trouble, in juvenile homes or prisons. But fate and the dynamics of racism again play a vicious trick, because the young males only become more alienated from their manhood and more feminized in those settings. They are given orders by men whom they must submit. They wait passively to be fed 3 meals a day by men, and finally they have sexual intercourse with men. It's no wonder that they are unable to play the role of black man when they leave. Does anybody have any observations they'd like to share?
Well, I think growing up right after the Civil Rights Movement, I was able to see a lot of the men disappeared, and you could start to see what you were talking about around that time, that the where you had nothing but older boys to look up to.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out well growing up. Most of the men were starting to vanish then. We had a big heroin epidemic at the time, and you could see people were mostly having other young boys to look up to.
Right. Right, that's a serious problem. Not that it's not inherently bad, but when there's no other males that have actually accomplished manhood, you know, to,
yeah,
like, you know, to look up as the ultimate objective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because those are still developing, and they haven't reached the goal yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they got all these, the jails you just mentioned, you know, she mentioned here. And it's amazing how they exploded these juvenile prison system. We have a big juvenile prison complex here in my hometown. You know, they have courts and they just want, you know, just keeping the kids all in, you know, in this prison thing. Just preparing, even in high schools here, have police cars parked all around. They have police on campus all day. You know, this, I saw kids at a local high school being escorted from the main building to the gymnasium by police. I mean, this is just like being under guard in jail. And this is only in the black school now. You know, they aren't doing this over at the other school.
No.
Right.
No.
And those
and
kids.
I started to see that growing up too. That type of thing. You know, we had a place called what was the name of this place? Spotford, right over in the Bronx. And when you start to admire the older boys, the older boys would brag that I've been over here in this juvenile facility. And then it became something popular to go into this juvenile facility. And then you add that to what you were talking about. We started to see in the schools the heavy security and police.
Right. I mean, when I was school, we had like just two security guards at the black school I went to. And, you know, they were pretty easy going for the most part. But, matter of fact, just 10 years before that, there were no security guards in high schools.
Yeah.
It exists. But, you know, you can see how these school districts start slowly increasing more, you would say, credentialed authoritarian people. And by the credentials, I mean badges.
Mm-hmm.
Walking around in uniform. And then they went from using, you know, I guess, outsourced security to, in some school districts, like they have university, school police departments, and they have jails and, you know, really holding cells and all the whole thing. They come by and ticket the kids, just like, and they have to go to court, and some classrooms are under supervision of a judge. I mean, all of this is straight conditioning for prison and homosexualization. Like you said, like these men having to submit to other men. We just spent the early part of this chapter talking about the black man submitting to the white man, you know, and the black man at large being, we had some, you know, pretty strong moments of uprising and resistance, but we can just talk about the spirituality of submission. I mean, I'm not saying that Christianity teaches spiritual submission, but the Christianity as taught by the European to the Negro, that's a different version from even what the white man teaches himself. And the black Christianity of the Negro, of the American African American captive, is a version of that spiritual submission. Because he's taught to turn of the cheek. All the preachers are good submitting preachers. Everybody's in there. Y'all saw, you know. Oh, that's right. You know, a good, traveling Negro. I'm not saying Negro in a negative way. I'm just saying that just black people that just have that. It's a culture. It's a submissive culture.
Well in theirs, it's Arnold Christian Soldier.
They talk about marching to war, right? The Arnold Christian Soldier. But what kind of war they fight? It ain't for black folks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying it's going on to fight the white supremacist wall, because under white supremacy, a Christian was a white person.
Mm-hmm.
They're not talking about the ancient, you know, Acts chapter 13, you know, black concept. They're talking about the European 11th, 12th century concept.
Mm-hmm.
That they, you know, because they began to just advance the idea that only, you know, when they say Christian, you read these old books from the 17th, 18th century, when they say Christian, they mean white person. So we're looking at they have created in the black man a culture of submission. It's totally permeated through his entire education, and spirituality is a part of education. Anytime a black man comes, like Nat Turner, now a lot of people don't want to talk about this, but he got his inspiration from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
See, he read it as it was written, not as the white man taught it to him, because in 1832, a black man couldn't be considered a Christian, and he somehow managed to learn how to read. He acquired knowledge of reading, and he realized, he read right there, he said, any man who kidnaps a man and caught with that man in his possession, is his life is required of him. That's a capital punishment case. And he figured it out. It didn't take him long. He showed it to all his friends. They said, that's right, these guys wasn't in church as we know it today.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Right. They read the text for what it meant, and they developed they had the proper idea of manhood, and they obviously were even mentored on the plantation by black men who aspired to have freedom, who wanted to be free and did not appreciate submitting. I bet they appreciated it a lot at all, and they always were probably thinking and trying to figure out how are they going to pull it off. How was I going to escape? How am I going to do this? You know, how am I going to pause in Malcolm? You know, or pause in somebody, pause in Overseer John, and trying to, you know, get that accomplished. Whereas, as far with that, 200 years, maybe 170 years later, where we are now, black man ain't trying to do that. He's trying to figure out how he going to get him a Lexus. How he going to get more than the next man, than his neighbor. We're going to read this next paragraph. Dr. Wilson states, one ex-prisoner patient told her, it is easier to endure life on the inside, prison that is, than to try to put up with the pressures of being a man, a husband, and a father in the street. The intent of race, and this is her comments on that, the intent of racist programming had been achieved. Give up on trying to be a black man, and why not be a woman? Many black males have answered unconsciously, why not? The braided and curled hair, earrings and bracelets and midriff tops, the cinched waisted pants and flowered underwear and high heel shoes with platforms in their pocketbooks are all behavioral answers to the above. They say in a loud and clear language, white man, I will never come after you. I cannot run in my high heels. You know that. And I may mess up my hair. The white run clothing industry is all too pleased to provide the costumes of feminine disguise for black male escape. However, they never would provide uniforms or combat gear if customers were willing to pay $1,000 per outfit. And so now,
it's pretty self-explanatory.
I think so too. Yeah. I'll go on. Television, which has become an important programmer of behavior in this social system and its culture, plays a further major role in alienating black males, especially children, from black manhood. And she goes on to talk about this other thing. But anyway, see, Good Times, the latest media fad for indoctrinating the black oppressed, shows a pitiful adult black male, I turn this page, who never can seem to find an adequate job, and a black adolescent male who is a criminal shoplifter and a complete clown, that's JJ, all of this takes place in the presence of a strong and powerful black female. That's Esther Rose's character. I don't forget her name on the show. Florida, that's it.
Florida.
And yeah, Florida with a Seminole, but it was fighting white supremacy real hard in Florida.
But that was Maud's maid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A black female who periodically drops down on her knees to pray to a white Jesus whose miracles saved the situation. Evidently, I didn't watch Good Times enough to see all that.
Yeah, Amin was saying that was Marge Maid.
Oh, Marge Maid on the show Marge, yeah.
Right.
Let me watch.
Yeah, right on Marge, and Good Times ended up being a spinoff from that, which she was similar on Bo, you know, laying down, getting on her knees and praying, because that was the only person that could help her, Jesus.
Oh, white Jesus. There you go. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I didn't even watch the Elvis. We were very young, of course. Worked it in there real smooth, didn't it? I thinking back on the people who were older than me around, I didn't hear them protesting that. Because they all obviously agreed with the pretext there.
Mm-hmm. And there was an interconnection with those shows. Maude was Edith Bunker's cousin, and then we had from the Bunkers came
Jefferson.
Jefferson's
right. I remember this. Well, not that I remember it happening, but in rerun.
To him or something next door. He was a neighbor or something.
Yep, that's right. George lived next door to them, and he moved.
So two comical black families.
Yeah, one went up and the other one just went lateral or something.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the other one lateral, yeah.
It said the same song said he was moving on up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. But,
we know the Jeffersons ran longer than, whichever Good Times. I know they ran, I know over 10 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
They may have been 11 or 13, whatever. They went off in the 80s.
Yeah.
George be considered an effeminate black male?
In real life. I mean, if you want to look at that.
Talking about the message that they were sending with James always having problems getting jobs and so on and so forth. And then he eventually died off. I saw Esther Rall in an interview say that she refused to take that role unless they gave her a father for her children. They wanted her to be a single mom.
Right.
They eventually accomplished because they killed him off.
Right. I didn't see James as effeminate. I interpreted his character as being one who was unsuccessful.
Right, that's what she was just saying. He was hopeless.
Right, it's hopeless. Right, what she said. Right, she didn't say, yeah, he was, you know, like, you know, weak or nothing like that. He just, that's the strongest, you know, that he could produce. You know, yeah, the most he'll have a woman who will look to a white man to save them.
Right.
Right, and so, and he'll
but
just.
But you know what was interesting is that he always was a stronger, more masculine figure that mm-hmm. ended up being a failure at all times compared to George Jefferson,
right,
who was a more flamboyant and feminine
buffoonish
type,
right.
Who
that's what I was trying to figure out, like what was the interpretation of him.
George Jefferson, I didn't see he said George is more flamboyant but not necessarily effeminate, just not as we would call it macho or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't as macho, but yes, he did. You know, he wasn't the most masculine of characters that they could have created, but he wasn't. I don't think he crossed that line into femininity. But they said, hey, at least you know, this is the most success a black man can hope to have. He can't be as bold and daring James. Evans character, James Evans. But
we have a caller. that wants to speak. Eric, you're live. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, you're live.
Hey, how you
welcome
doing?
To Beyond the Book Club.
How you doing?
Was that an accidental pressing of the one?
It might have been. I was listening to the show and on the other line. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. No problem. That's okay. All right. Go ahead. Go ahead, Charles.
Okay. And, yeah, I think that's what they tried to show us, that, or maybe you could look at it like either a black man got like a 50% of chance of gaining some kind of material success under white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either he will make it or he won't. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not in a high degree of probability that he will.
Mm-hmm.
But James wasn't a clown, though.
No, James
wasn't a clown. Yeah, and Jefferson, there is like a reward for his buffoonery. It seemed like to me.
Hmm. But it seems that his buffoonery
was successful. Yeah.
He wasn't trying to amuse everyone or to, you know, they made it seem like he was trying to be very masculine. He was trying to be very forceful, but since he was a short statured man, it appeared funny.
Oh,
so he was little,
but he still, you know, danced around a lot, and,
you know, he danced. I didn't
put together him being, you know, diminutive in stature.
Yeah,
all of those things are planned out, and they send a message.
Right. I mean,
yeah,
danced very much. He did it on the intro, the opening credits. They had a flip, you know, clip of him dancing, you know.
Right.
But during the program, he was always talking about, hey, my woman gonna do this. He's trying to take care of Weezy, care of his mother.
Some say those shows, all of them, were exploitative.
I don't know in which capacity. I'm not gonna say they weren't. But I'm just looking at how he was exerting a high degree of masculinity, looking out for his family, his friends from the neighborhood. He was mentoring kids.
Yeah.
No, but he was such a small man, and he was, you know, in his attempt to be like, let's say, trying to be like James, and it was supposed to be amusing. Oh, look at this little guy. You know, he's trying to be, you know, assertive, and, you know, and everybody, and what's that good lady, the maid, it was constantly like
berating him
for trying to be, just because he didn't have an imposing physical stature, or maybe he didn't know how to effectively use his personality to be more imposing or whatever. And so she always challenged him, you know, him in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, they always trying to really, you know, show us that, you know, we can only get so far, you know.
Okay, we have another caller from 314. Did you want to add to the conversation?
Yeah, you know, you're talking about the Jefferson.
Right.
One thing that kind of, you had, what was it, Florence? That was married to the white guy. You know, that's always showed out there. Is that the only way that you can be successful? Is that you have to be married to someone other than who your mama was, should I say?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But at the same
right.
time,
on her case, but daddy was, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's the
time.
Daughter. Florence is the maid. Are you talking about
the
maid?
The daughter. The daughter. Yeah,
the
you're right.
Well, it was the
Roxy Roker's
son. I'm sorry. Roxy Roker's daughter. The Willis's daughter.
Oh, she married George's son.
Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, she was with George's son. It sure was.
Right.
Yeah.
You were talking about? Were you talking about Florence the maid?
I thought he was trying. He was trying to talk about Helen. He was trying to talk about Helen.
Oh, that Helen was with a man, a white guy.
With Tom Willis.
Yes, right.
Yeah, he sure was.
Yeah, Willis.
Yes.
Yeah, it was he was talking about. We had the names crossed up, but you're right. She was with Tom Wilson. And I think they lived on the floor above George.
They did.
Mm-hmm.
They stayed upstairs.
Yeah, they let them know, well, you made this far, Negro, but if you want to go further, well, you can't go further because you're the man. But the black woman could go higher with the white man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right. You know, we peeped that level of game, you know, when we, you know, fought it. But that's just because we, you know, sitting around talking about it. I guess we could have done in our 20s.
Right.
Saying, yeah. But that's right. That's how they work. They slip it in, and we understand it in a subliminal level. A lot of people got it, caught on to it subconsciously. You know?
Right. But, matter of fact, it's interesting how his employees even disrespected him. From right. The maid. I'm talking about George.
Mm-hmm. His wife and his employee.
Right.
Yeah.
But could I ask you another question? Can I ask you one other question?
Yes, sir.
As much history as black people have when they used to control the world, I wonder why come there's no movies, no directors making movies, no black directors making movies along those lines. If you go even back into ancient times, but at the same time, if you were to do something futuristic like Star Trek, and, you know, there's many comic book superheroes that, you know, black comic writers have produced. Wonder why come there's no content movies, no movies being made with that particular type of content.
We were just talking about
look at it in terms of financing. They can get the movie made. Look at Blade.
Yeah.
I mean, the expert on Blade shared with them about how Blade, when it came from the comic strips, and they put him on, and how they transformed that. Would you mind elaborating on that for us?
Yeah, he had, I guess Wesley Snipes had quite a bit of creative control on the first ones. The first ones were very interesting. He was a lot stronger. He was in charge. And then the creative control started to move away from him near the final one. I think it was Blade 3. And, I guess there was a 4 that didn't even include Wesley Snipes. But they were moving him being in control to another group of white people, starting to take control. And then that series just went to hell from there. I think there's a lawsuit, I believe, against Snipes over that.
Yeah, they had that waiting on him when he gets out, and then they'll have rule against him and then take as much wealth as they can. So basically the politics of the film industry.
Right.
Everything that prevents, now let's say, you can say prevent to a certain degree the amount of success. Now, I'm not going to argue like you said, the movie was made, you know, but they're always undermining it. And then when Wesley got into trouble, black people did not rally around Wesley.
Uh-uh.
They left Wesley out and they ridiculed him, and he heard jokes made by Michael Bazin and a host of other character, cartoonish, buffoonish people. Making life situations because all those people they are slaves and they work for the people who are promoting this genocide against our people. But I'm going to read this next paragraph. We got about two more pages and we can wrap this up and we can entertain all the rest of these ideas because they're great. These weekly insults to black manhood that we have been programmed to believe are entertainment and not direct racist warfare. Okay, to our listening audience, we'll be going in overdrive. If you have any questions or like to listen to it further, you can dial the telephone number.
323-580-5707. If you're in the chat room, you have about 30 seconds, and you won't be able to hear the rest of the show. However, you will be able to catch it in the archive. Replay of the show. The number again is 323-580-5707.
All right. They further reinforce perhaps the unconscious thinking of black people, a loss of respect for black manhood while carrying that loss to ever deeper levels of consciousness. This reality of white supremacy oppression must be approached either head on or with circular patterns of behavior that which helped the person to escape the horrendous reality of death. Sex having been granted us that one so limited area wherein black males could express manhood became the area of behavior where circular patterns of escape were acted out. Politically speaking, attempts were made to hide in the dark black vaginal orifice. When that closed down, the white vaginal orifice was tried, and when this proved satisfactory, hiding place or passage to freedom, black and white male anuses were tried. One might say these became the hoped undercover underground railroads to freedom, the underground railroads as escape from the white man no longer being operative. You know, the practical ones people used to use, so they're using sex as this means of escape or racism in the act. And in the next paragraph, because black men are forced into patterns of both conscious and unconscious logic, ever increasing incidence of black male passivity and feminization, bisexuality, and homosexuality can be understood logically and accurately predicted. There is only one solution: that black males collectively face the horrendous presence of white males and conquer the accompanying fear engendered by this act. After the white man is faced, he must be resisted steadfastly and fought if he continues to wage war on black people. He has demonstrated historically that he intends to do. As it is black males and not black females who must do the fighting. That's the interesting. I like to work my way through this right here, and I would like to start at the last point. There's been some discussion here about this neo-black feminist movement that is trying to, I would say, hijack the reawakening of the black man to assume his rightful position in black community by these radical feminists. And we know that the black woman is not equipped, is not able, and not willing to do no fighting on the front lines as the primary line of offense or defense against white supremacy. And these feminists seek to wrestle the authority away from the men, and these are my words, from us to, in my opinion, to protect white supremacy, even if it's subconscious or mechanism. But I see it as destructive to the movement, and whether they admit it or not, I'm not looking for their agreement on this. I see those females as overall destructive and wanting to continue the same paradigm of black male subservience to carry out, to remain, let's say, go on indefinitely, would end up resulting in the entire black being enslaved. Anybody have any thoughts on any of these three paragraphs?
Well, I would agree with you. I do see that type of thing going on where females eventually males have to deal with the front line, and so physically, a male has more strength than a woman. Women have equal mental strength, but physically, it would be males who would be taking on the front line position. And so I would agree with that. Mm-hmm.
Right, why are we going to put our women up against the men of another group? Mm-hmm. This is what they propose. These women who we know aren't intellectually or psychologically prepared for anything which they propose, which they claim they can do, are saying, hey, you know what, we got this, we'll be in charge. You know, at least let us be able to override whatever reforms you try to make. Let me let you run, you know. That's not the case. They have shown that they know history nor themselves, and they intend on trying to maintain a current state of comfortability. In other words, they like things. They don't want to see hardly any change. and they don't want life to change too much. And so they say, hey, let's just try to keep this. We got a good thing going. And what about this other paragraph where she's one before preceding it, where the black man is using sex, particularly homosexual sex, anal sex, as a means of a underground railroad to sort of escape from white supremacy. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Well, that's starting to happen. But even with females, I saw it start to happen some years ago. Yeah, you know, the same thing I was talking about earlier with the older boys training the younger boys, and as a child, I was taught that as a man, I'm supposed to go out and get as many women as I could possibly get. And that would make you a man.
Right.
You know,
prove your manhood by
how many women's lives you can destroy.
Destroy,
exactly. Genocide. Hey.
But now is a new turn. It's the Underground Railroad these days.
And I
see a lot of people participating in that.
Don't call it the Backdoor Railroad.
Hey.
And I catch y'all off guard. There you go. At the Hershey Bear.
I didn't want to go there.
Okay,
I
was just Hershey. There you go.
Oh, wow. Got some jokes. They break it up there. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of depressing. Before we start crying up in here. Here we go. It's on page 91, the first paragraph. He says here, black male homosexuality and bisexuality are the only long-run byproducts of males submitting in fear to other males in a social arena. A large number of black male homosexuals and bisexuals who report that they have and they had little or no respect for their fathers have had completely different histories. They had grown up with the knowledge that their fathers died while in defense of their manhood when it was attacked, challenged by the oppressor. This is especially true if their mothers also admired and respected their father's manhood. Then manhood would have been viewed as something so that one dies in defense of it. Interesting. Because we hear a lot of stories. I mean, I know kids growing up, we don't necessarily know all the details of, you know, of what goes on. But the point is, how many times, I would like to ask, how many times have we heard tale of somebody's father losing life in defense of black manhood?
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He was doing it. Nobody reported that.
Mm-hmm.
Could have. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's reporting it. They're not going to say he was down trying to hold it down, trying to, you know, represent, and was saying he wasn't going to take this or we weren't going to take that. No, they won't say that. They'll just say, they'll make up anything. They'll say, oh, the police was, you know, doing this to him. It's still, the way they even reported it, it may paint him in a less aggressive position. And so we don't even report on black men as heroic.
No.
You know, we don't even do that. I'm talking culture. I'm not saying individuals haven't done it. I'm saying we culturally do that. We don't say mother. We don't say Malcolm X died in defense of black manhood.
Mm-hmm.
They just say he was slain, human, you know, rights black activists.
Matter of fact, people go out of their way to take away from him being defensive. They pride this thing of him becoming passive at some point.
Right.
In the end, he understood what was really going on, and they.
He never became passive.
No, but the story ends up that way.
Right, right. That's the revision. That's the revision of his life's work. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And black people who get in position who are not able to widely circulate information about. Brother Minister Malcolm, like they are under orders, which they dutifully obey, to depict him as, brother, I mean, just noted. Skip on down right here. All black children should be protected by black people from being alienated against any of their genes, be those genes of color, sexual gender, or sickle cell anemia. Racists will attempt to bring about such genetic alienation, but black people should be prepared to counter it. I like the way she said even sickle cell anemia, because that's a black trait. So even if it kills you, don't even try to get them to alienate you from blackness in no form. That was pretty strong there.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have anything to say about that?
No, I just amen and cosign.
Right on.
Right on.
Black psychiatrists must understand that whites may condone homosexuality for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We as blacks must see it as a strategy for destroying black people that must be countered. Homosexuals and bisexuals, I almost read that in my Clayton and Biggs before.
Mm-hmm.
I had to control it. Homosexuals or bisexuals should neither be condemned nor degraded.
Right.
As they did not decide that they would be so programmed in childhood. The racist system should be held responsible. Right. Our task is to treat and prevent its continuing and increasing occurrence. I have anything to say about this? Right. So when I get what she's saying in the sense that people just shouldn't just go around and just attack homosexuals. We understand it's a system that created that homosexuality.
Right, and we're always looking for an opportunity for some black-on-black crime, and homosexuality seems to be, you know, the new, you know, buzzword.
Right.
You know, to be able to jump on that. Like the video that we were looking at that was out earlier, that the black guy slapped the homosexual girl. And everybody thought it was hilarious, just funny, and good for her.
That's just an excuse. They'd have said the same thing if she wouldn't.
Right. It was just but
an excuse.
It's okay. Right. That okays us to be able to enjoy and revel in black-on-black violence and hatred.
Right.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. It's the new poster child for us to express our hatred.
Right.
When she turned in that direction, where was her support system? That she felt so alienated to go that direction. Where were those people at?
Right.
It's a monstrous system that create, and we got to try to arrest it. And it's a pitiful thing that every social institution that we have has, like we said, there's no social system in the black community that helps people counter racism, nor helps us in our development to maturity. I mean, we have church, we got scouting, we got all these things. They don't do nothing to combat these issues. Not a single thing.
Mm-hmm.
All of religious institutions, I'm going to pick on the church, but every institution has not. But I'm going to say like Dr. Umar said. Dr. Umar said what they provide is what people need. It's social services, even though it may not be sufficient, and people respond to that. And I guess unless you can create a organization that provides services, social services, then people will listen to what you have to say because, you know, their needs are out of control. Well, I say if we were able to provide an economic base where we can provide jobs, that would be the social service. And then they wouldn't have to, dole out handouts that – the white supremacist power structure give to the particular social institution, be it NAACP or the church, and then they have to in turn be good and not offend the white supremacist power structure in order to be able to provide services for its community.
In seconds? Yep.
All right. Well, this is the last installment on this, and I guess we'll pick up on, I guess everybody, if you want to finish reading this, page 92, and y'all knock that out. See y'all next week. Peace.
Peace.
Music up. Stylist. You think I want this on there?
You the one talking.
But I was sitting there listening to all this. Y'all, there you go. That's it. Bring that beat back. Clear my throat.
Oh.
Drinking water. I'm about to start. 1, 2, 1, 2.
Turn my mic up.
Turn my mic up.